We have a special edition of the In-Depth podcast this week. As part of our Cheryl Hines episode, we had the opportunity to join her at a comedy show fundraiser for her husband, presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I interviewed them together before the show, and it was a pretty entertaining chat.
We got arrested, or Cheryl got arrested. Cheryl got
arrested. Married since 2014, Cheryl recalls Larry David's initial reaction to their relationship.
Good advice.
Just like, it's not going to work.
Okay, why?
A close encounter with a yak.
Did you think you were in trouble?
I was worried.
And an annoying emu.
I would come home and she'd be at the computer looking up how long do emus live.
Plus, Hines opens up about her challenges of dealing with her husband's controversial views.
And you should be thinking,
maybe that's not the best way to go about it.
All of that and much more right here on the In-Depth with Graham Bensinger podcast.
So I wanted to start by tossing a couple stories your guys' way that I found particularly entertaining. The first one being the thinking on your end behind getting an emu for her daughter early in the dating process.
I got her my baby emu. A friend of mine breeds emus. I got her the little baby emu, and it was the perfect gift.
He was cute.
But then when he grew, he was a little bit imprinted on me. It would swim in the pool and do laps, you know, with me. And then if I came up to it, it would roll over and let me stroke its breast. And then it would come in the house. It was very curious and very affectionate toward me. But he was very hostile to Cheryl.
He didn't like people. Except Bobby. And so he would just chase people around and terrify them and try to peck them. And the dog figured out how to open the sliding glass doors. So he would open the doors and then the emu would come in with his dumb head. And he would chase you around. And by the way, they're dangerous with their giant feet.
She was trying to have a comedy when you were doing that, when you were pitching that film.
Yes, I was trying to get funding for a film, and I could only get reception outside, so I was walking around outside on my phone.
This was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Trying to describe what the film would be about, and the emu, Toby, starts chasing me. And I was trying to keep my voice low and calm because I didn't want to tell the person on the other end of the phone that I was being chased by an emu in my own yard. I sound like a crazy person. And this thing is coming up behind me and I'm sweating bullets. And then I finally see it. It runs into the house. And then I close the glass doors and finish my conversation. But now I have an emu in my house. And, you know, by the time he got home, I was like, I'm done.
I would come home and she'd be at the computer looking up how long do emus live.
And they live a long time, by the way. They live a long time.
You said Bobby has a sense of adventure that catapults you out of your seat. give a little color to that, if you don't mind.
I don't even know where to begin. I mean, it's scuba diving and jumping off cliffs in Jamaica. And
you said you find it exciting most of the time.
Yeah, like we went to Bhutan, which I didn't know, honestly. I had no idea. First of all, I didn't really know where Bhutan was at the time. I also didn't know we were going to be climbing a mountain when we got there.
I told her on the plane. It was a trekking expedition.
But by the way, when he says trekking expedition, we're going straight up a mountain. The other people we were with, they had been training for it. They knew that this was happening. And I am just barely, there were times he was literally behind me, like pushing my butt up because at some point your legs just get wobbly and you're like, I'm not gonna make it to the top.
Right.
And then when we got to the top,
we got attacked by a yak.
Yeah, he was really about to die from a yak attack. There was this rogue yak, like a solo, he was by himself, and for some reason did not like Bobby, because Bobby was laughing. He was laughing. laughing. And I'm like, it's not, whatever's happening is not funny, because he had these giant horns.
He charged us.
Yeah, he charged us.
When he got close, I hit him on the nose with the cell phone.
I mean, that's how close he came.
With the camera.
I really thought he was going to die.
Did you think you were in trouble?
I was worried when he was charging us, yeah. I was worried something would happen to her.
But he kept laughing because it was funny. I mean, in the sense that we were in Bhutan being attacked by a yak, that's slightly funny.
How about the best part of the trip to Cuba to see Fidel Castro outside of the lemonade?
We ended up in court.
Oh, yes.
What do you mean?
Oh, no. Well, okay.
We got arrested, or Cheryl got arrested. Cheryl got arrested.
What'd you do?
Okay. My daughter wanted to get her hair braided. So we were in the square, and these women start braiding her hair, very cute, and I sat down to hang out with my daughter, and they start braiding my hair, and I said, oh, no, no, I actually don't want my hair braided. But they continued to braid my hair, which looked fantastic. And then they were charging, I don't even know how much, and Bobby walked up, and Bobby speaks Spanish. I don't speak Spanish, a little here and there. And Bobby said, no, that's too much money. Her hair looks crazy, and she didn't even want you to braid it. So, and he's like, you shouldn't pay that. You didn't want your hair braided. And then it turned into, the next thing you know, we're going to the police station.
Yeah, the police showed up, and they walked us. They walked us down the street, and there were crowds on either side of the street watching the spectacle. And then they took us to this old, I think it was like a 16th century fortress, and there was a moat, and there was a bridge across it. And that was where the police station was. And they wanted to take Cheryl and Kat, because they were the ones who owed the money. And they
so you guys were going because you were in trouble.
Like this
wasn't.
Yes.
Okay. Oh yeah.
Well, we were only in trouble because he said, "Don't pay. Yeah. That's too much, and they're taking advantage of you."
Them.
And when we were in the courthouse, I mean, like I said, I don't speak Spanish very well, but I can understand some words. And he's talking, and he would say, "Muy feo, muy feo." And I was like, okay,
I was describing her hair.
I understand. It looked bad. It was not a good look. You don't have to keep saying it. And then the other guy would say that too, and I'm like, I get it. I never wanted my hair in tight braids.
So then we had a little trial in there where the chief of police tried the case, and he ordered us not to pay. And we told the story to Castro. Well, he was laughing at it. And he said, I think they were charging us $75. And he says in the letter that that's more than they pay me for giving a 20-hour speech. And he said, it's more than the finest, than a grilled octopus in the finest restaurant in Seville.
So Banff, Canada, Waterkeeper Alliance fundraiser. If you don't mind, Bobby, set the scene and how the introduction
I was close friends with Larry David, and I had my family had lived with him and his family for two summers, and then we would go on vacations together. Every year I did a pro celebrity ski event in Banff. And Larry brought Cheryl to one of those, and that was the first time we met. And at the time, the both of us were married. And so there wasn't any sort of instantaneous chemistry, but we had a good time with each other.
Like the first time I met Bobby at that event, Larry and I had talked, and we said, we're not going to ski. Like, we're just going to be here for, I don't even know if it was 24 hours, but it was a very fast trip.
And that didn't work out too well.
No, we get there, and the next thing you know, Bobby's got us in skis, and he looked at me and goes, you don't even have a knit cap on. I said, I know, I didn't think we were skiing. And then he gave me his hat. And I said, now you're gonna be cold. And he's like, I'm not worried about it.
And 6 years later, she came back to the same event. And at that point, we were both in the middle of a divorce. And the scales fell off my eyes. And I knew that, Larry has all these kind of rules that everybody is supposed to know. And I knew that it would violate one of those rules if I dated his television wife without permission. And so I went up to the Lowe's Hotel in New York. I met him late at night. It was maybe 10 or 11 o'clock. And I met him in his suite. And I said to him that I was thinking of dating Cheryl. And I was very relieved at his reaction. And he said he was very happy about it and that Cheryl was the best person that he'd ever met. He said that she was beloved in the industry and that she was the only one in Hollywood who didn't have a single enemy. When he talked to Cheryl, he was, that's not what he said.
What did he say?
He said, that's never gonna work. that'll never work.
And serious or joking?
No, I think he was giving her good advice.
Just like, it's not a good idea. It's not going to work.
Okay, why?
What name could you say where he'd be like, that's great. I'm happy for you.
Yeah, I don't think you would.
I don't know who, yeah.
So I was talking to your close friend Rachel, and she said you guys were, her words, smitten with each other from day one, still smitten with each other today, but that... She also commended you guys for always working on the relationship and prioritizing working on it. How so?
I mean, I think that's true.
Yeah.
I feel so grateful for it to feel that way about another person. And we're as opposite as two people can get. I mean, we share the same values, but in terms of our approach to life and... our everything, what we did growing up, our childhoods, we're utterly different.
It's challenging sometimes because we're both in the public eye in a sense, you know? So I think that chatter gets very loud sometimes, people coming at you and saying this and that. So it's been our experience that we have to take a step back, not look at social media, don't watch the news, let's talk about being husband and wife and boyfriend and girlfriend and having fun.
When we got married, my kids had been through the death of their mom, and they were young and they were all at an age where they would be at risk. And she brought this special love into their lives and a very good judgment, a wisdom that she has.
With regards to the campaign, Cheryl, initially, as I understand it, you had limited, if any, interest in getting involved. What changed?
In a moment of insanity.
It's been... interesting and exciting to watch Bobby inspire people. He's bringing people together in a very real way that to me is just extraordinary. I've never seen Republicans and Democrats and independents all together wanting the same thing. I just realized, this is big.
And in what ways, if she was up for it, were you interested in really getting Cheryl involved?
Everything that she is involved with is good for me. People love her when she makes public appearances with me, it makes people happy. When she does interviews, people love to see her. She has very good strategic judgment. She asks important questions. I mean, one of the examples is when we went to choose the venue where I was gonna make my campaign announcement, Cheryl came with me and we looked at six or seven different places, and she knew immediately which place would work. It was one of the most important and significant and consequential moments in the campaign, and the appearance is largely due to Cheryl's interventions.
You've been known for having polarizing views to some or controversial opinions. What was it like for you kind of figuring out, because I'm sure you don't agree with everything, how to support your husband, but not always endorsing the views?
It's a process, you know. You're just sort of living through the moments. He's the smartest person I've ever met in my life, and he really knows what he's talking about. He is an attorney. He wants to give you the facts, and that's it. And sometimes I will have a conversation where it's like, people have to be in a space to receive information and to hear it, and are you considering their feelings and thoughts? And it's like, he laughs when I say that, because he's like, if it's science, there doesn't involve feelings.
And you're thinking what in those conversations?
No, I think she described it perfectly. I'm completely like, you know, the way that this lands with people is irrelevant to me if it's truth.
There was a tough moment where you're like, you proposed like publicly separating for like a cool down period. What was the thinking then, and what were the kind of positive lessons learned from that?
It was something I said that was then misinterpreted by the press and attributed to me, and it was very harmful and hurtful, and it was damaging to Cheryl. You know, at that point, I was so heavily censored, I couldn't go on CNN or on the Today Show and say I didn't say that. And so Cheryl was just getting hammered, and I felt an obligation to protect her. And so I made that suggestion to her at the time that we should have a kind of faux separation to make people, to make it stop.
And you had to be thinking, what the hell is
this? Well, maybe that's not the best way to go about it.
Right.
Was a sweet thought. But yeah, not the right one.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
That does it for my chat with Cheryl Hines and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. To see video clips from the interview, head to youtube.com/Graham Bensinger. Remember to give us a rating and review. Thanks again for listening.